And my name is David Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is John Hewitt. John created one of the world's first computerized tax applications and then founded Jackson Hewitt, which grew to 6,000 offices with over $1 billion in revenue. He also founded Liberty Tax, grew to thousands of locations before he sold the company. And he founded Loyalty Brands in 2018, which has already grown to 12 brands in 5 years. He's also the author of a book called I Compete, How My Extraordinary Strategy for Winning Can Be Yours. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've accomplished so much. And I saw one stat that says you've helped over 5,000 people own their own businesses. How does it feel to make such an impact on so many people's lives?
You know, it's the thing that's driven me for 54 years is changing people's lives. So it's incredibly gratifying. When I was a kid, I thought I was immature and like we all were and stupid. And I thought, well, I'll make a few million dollars and retire. And then I realized that the joy is the journey, not the, when you cash in, it's anticlimactic. And so every day I wake up happy and go to sleep happy because I'm changing lives.
Yeah. And through entrepreneurship. And that's so exciting. I want to explore a couple of topics, and then I want to delve into some of your background and some of the things that you've done. But in your book, I Compete, you talk about this idea of meeting customer expectations. And I feel like a myth that I want to explore with you is that the goal of business is to meet customer expectations. Do you think that's true or not true?
Yeah, I agree with you that it's a myth. And I think that one of my favorite business authors said it very eloquently, Stan Phelps. He wrote that when you go to a meeting or go to a party, let's say it's at 6 p.m., he said almost no one comes exactly on time. Everyone's either early or late. And in the same way, you rarely meet a customer's expectations. You either fail to meet them or you exceed their expectations. And so we have, I think, pretty unique way of evaluating our success. We don't do customer scores and so forth. We look at the percentage of customers each year that we exceed their expectations. And so that's the way we judge our performance. It's not whether we think we do a good job. It's whether they think we've done a good job.
Wow. That's a really powerful way to do that. You know, it's so funny. Every time I do anything like buy an airline ticket or go to a hotel, I get a net promoter score survey. That's one of these. Would you recommend your, this company to a friend? What do you think about that net promoter score idea versus this idea of exceeding customer expectations? Does it really tell you if you've exceeded customer expectations?
No, it doesn't, because for a couple of reasons. Number one is almost everyone has a survey. And back in the old days, they used to mail it out or hand you a written card, please fill in these surveys. Today, it's mostly done online. Still, occasionally, they'll do it in paper. But only the people that are really happy or really dissatisfied typically fill those out. I certainly don't have time to fill one out. And so, no, I don't believe in a written document or a typed document. So we do something in all of our companies that's unique, almost unique. It's not only a differentiator and superior in our own industries, but compared to all industries. We call each and every customer after they've been in. So if they've been in to do a tax return, we call them 2 days later. If they're a customer of our mobile dog grooming, we call them up 2 days later. We said, how do we do for you? And turns out customers love that because no one's calling them. No one's asking. No one cares about their opinion. And so we get a higher retention. And another thing, David, that a side benefit of that is I found in every one of my industries, and I've been in a dozen now, that my employees on the ground aren't good at asking for referrals. I mean, you explain to them how important it is, you teach them, you implore them, you try to reward them, but they're just not good at asking for referrals. So this very personable caller finds out whether the customer was happy, whether we exceeded their expectations. And if they're happy, which is the vast majority of the time, we say, please refer us to your friends. And do you know, have any other friends that might be interested in this service? And so it's, I do not believe in the traditional way that others are doing it, that it encapsulates enough information to be accurate.
Wow. That's it sounds like you've got kind of a fanatical approach to client, meaning exceeding client expectations and really making sure that those, you know, the clients are happy. That's amazing. How do you do that though in a franchise model? I've always been involved in, you know, direct services with clients. And it seems like in a franchise model, you've got to basically train a lot of people, but it's very distributed, right? So it's how do you maintain that level of high quality service in that kind of an environment?
Well, you're exactly right. It's more difficult than a franchise, because my job as a franchisor is to give you the best system in the industry. And your job as a franchisee is to follow that system and follow the recipe exactly. Well, out of the over 5,000 franchisees I brought in my career, not one of them listens 100%. And one of the things they don't listen to is they don't call customers. Some of them won't call customers. Well, what we do is instead of they call one every customer, we call one out of every, it depends on the brand and how big the purchase is, but we typically call one out of every 100 customers. And when we find out that they haven't been called, and we don't ask the customer whether you've been called before, we notice that if no customer says, oh, you've already called me, then we know they haven't called. And you can tell in their performance. The superstars, the high performers call their customers and the low performers don't. So in a franchise system, since you're never going to get 100% that follow you, you have this comparable analysis. So we can say, look, the franchisees that are calling their customers are doing 12% better than those that don't. And so we hit franchises over the head with that when they're not following the system, that, you know what? You're just not living up to your potential. Joe over here is calling customers right next door. His growth is 20% and yours is 4%. So if you want to meet your goals that you've laid out for us, you need to follow the system and call your customers. But it's nothing is ever 100%. There's only three certainties in life: death, tax, and change.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you've learned a lot about customer service through your career, but take me back to the beginning, right? When you were just starting out. So did you have all of those principles kind of at the beginning when you created the first tax application, you were launching your first company, or did this evolve slowly over time? Kind of when did you kind of figure out this model of exceeding customer expectations, and how did that work into your strategy?
Yeah, I've been doing this. This is my 55th tax season. I have 54 years of experience. I got to say, I'm a lot more wise and than I was 54 years ago. I'm a lot smarter. And, human beings tend to learn mostly by mistake. And I read recently that people that are most successful have made the most mistakes. And I have no doubt of that. For my franchisees, in order to give you the best system, I have to know what all the mistakes are. So I've either made every mistake or seen every mistake. So I help you as a franchisee avoid every single mistake, because I've already made them all. But we learn from observation and testing. For example, the calling the customers was, I just fell into it by accident. One time I made a bet with one of my franchisees. He had raised his fees a lot back 25 years ago. And the neighboring franchise had raised his fees a little bit more. And he had, so I said, oh, Kukler next door has raised his fees more than you. And he said, well, he's going to suffer for it next year. And so I bet him a dollar that we would have a neutral party call 100 each of their customers. And this was in the summer between taxes. We'll have a neutral party call each of 100 of their customers and give them a rating and rate them. Did we exceed your expectations and so forth? And so we had a woman that called all the franchise, 100 of each. And of course I won my dollar, but maybe that was one of the reasons I loved it. But the woman who called the customers in August, was so excited by the way the customers responded to the call that she called all her customers. And so by accident, we invented calling your customer.
Wow, that's great. That's a great story. So, you know, in that environment where you're really calling customers, learning from them, tell me a little bit more about the nuances of what you're learning. Because I think that people that don't do this kind of assume that they're going to get a little number to spreadsheet and they get some averages and they'll look at this over time. And yeah, that's interesting. But it feels like you're doing something deeper in these conversations and learning things and taking it back to improve systems. Tell me about give me a little texture on that. What are you really learning?
Yeah, we have multiple goals in the call, right? First goal is to enhance their customer experience. That's almost automatic. Most people love to be thought of and asked. So that's almost automatic. But the person that's making the call has to be sensitive that the person is enjoying this situation or they need to end the call as quickly as possible. But so one goal is to get a higher retention. Goal number two is to get higher referrals and ask for a referral instead of a typical employee. Most employees don't care about referrals. So even if you're a tax preparer, you would think that I would care if I would get a referral because then I might get an extra customer. But most preparers aren't that thoughtful. And most dog groomers don't think about that. When they take the dog back, they feel uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable asking for a referral. There's only 5% of us that are so sales-minded. We don't mind rejection. We don't mind being out there and saying, you know, do you have any friends that might be interested in this service? And saying it with a positive, friendly way to do it. So we check for, are we getting more referrals? Are we getting better retention? And then thirdly, you get to improve on the fly, right? Because again, most of my experience has been in income tax. And when you're growing rapidly, like I always have, I've gone to zero to 10,000 offices, right, over my career. So when you're growing, you're hiring new tax preparers. And some of them are excellent and some of them are average and some of them are pathetic. And for whatever reason, and you don't want to wait until April 15th to find out if you have a preparer that's not performing. And it doesn't matter if I think the preparer is doing a good job or he thinks he's doing a good job. It only matters if the customers. And, you know, the number one complaint we've got over the years is the person just didn't seem like they knew what they were doing. They were fumbling. And it's just they're not confident and they don't come across as confident and helpful. I'm sure that in all your customers' experiences recently, not everyone does a good job, right? Whether it's a waitress or a clerk or a valet driver. You know, I was at a gourmet restaurant the other day and there were five valet guys standing around. And no one came and opened the car door for my guest. That would enhance the experience, right? If they came, then handed me the keys, but no one came around. They were just sitting there talking. So you're always going to get inappropriate customer service. In my life, I've seen the customer service in this country degenerate for my whole life. So we want to be able to improve, get our customers to the best people. We want our Michael Jordans and our Mickey Mantles and our we want our elite to handle the most customers.
Yeah, that is a really good strategy. You know, you've invested a lot in technology over the years, right? So you kind of, you almost invented this category of computerized tax preparation and then rolled it out. How do you feel about the investments in technology helping customer service versus hiring and training great people helping customer service? Is it all about the people? Is it all about the technology? Will technology eventually replace great customer service? How does that all work together?
Well, David, what I find in my career is that, and I've had thousands of employees, I've built two public companies worth $1.5 billion. And only 2 or 3% act like owners. Most of them act like employees. So it would be, if you could get a formula to how do you hire people, how do you find people and hire them that act like owners, you would have the elixir of the century, of the millennium. You could find all people like that. You're going to get mostly people that don't care, that are here for a job and that don't go the extra mile. You know, there's very little company on the extra mile, right? It's pretty lonely there. So it's using computers can be in our system back out. I'll give you 1981 and an easy example of how computers change the world to make it better, to enable us to offer better service. So what our software that we invented in 1981, the first software for an Apple computer, it was decision tree based. So most of your audience probably doesn't know taxes, but on a tax return, let's say you give charitable contributions. Well, most taxpayers don't ask, did you give any clothing or property? Because you can deduct the value of the clothing or property. They don't ask, did you drive any miles for a Sunday school teacher or an officer in a church organization or in some charitable organization? And as a result, many deductions get missed because they're either too lazy to, or most people don't have it. So we use our software. There weren't numbers in the software, there were just questions. So if you had charitable contributions, then it would ask those questions. If you had rental property, it would ask, did you drive back and forth to the rental property to do repairs, collect rents, show the property? And most tax returns, that line item, that travel, was left off. And we could go back when we acquired practices, we would see that almost no one's asking those questions. So you use technology to be more thorough.
Hmm. And that really helps deliver better customer service. It makes the employee more confident, delivers happier result. It seems like it can all work together. But you got to have great people and then technology enabled, it feels like. One thing you said that was really powerful is that only, you know, in a typical organization, only 2 to 3% of the people act like owners. And you've built your career around the franchise model, where you really do have owners who are running each individual company. And is that an advantage of the franchise model here? Because you've got owners closer to the actual customer who's doing it, closer to the employee and the customer versus a large corporation who's just got managers doing the same thing?
David, I'm unstoppable. Each of my companies has been the fastest growth. And so think about it. It's a neighborhood by neighborhood battle. If you go back to the tax industry, H&R Block had 9,000 locations. And I started with six. I bought a company called Mel Jackson that had six. But most people in the tax business, most tax customers travel less than 10 or 11 minutes from where they live to where they file. So it's really a neighborhood by neighborhood battle. And an easy example, that one of the things that we did better than Block and my companies have voiced them better than our competitors, is they're mostly company stores. So you have this company employee and they're open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. So I love driving by at this time of year in winter, driving by a H&R Block office, especially in the colder areas of the country. And it's 20 degrees out and it's 8:45, and the customers are standing outside, and the preparers are sitting inside, and they're like a bank. They don't open till 9:00. But if you're an owner, you're opening the door, and our best owners are over in their line saying, "Hey, we're open across the street," right? And then at 9:05, there's a knock on the door, right? There's a customer at come stage in our block. They've locked the door at 9:00. They're in there working, and the preparers typically don't even get out of their seat. They wave them away, come back tomorrow. I mean, that's how company employees act. My owner's running up and they're leaving the door open, and as long as they're there. So that's just one simple example. We work longer, owners work longer, they work harder, and they're greedy. They want customers. To that employee, you know, if a tax return today is a little bit less than $300 average fee, to a tax preparer, he's going to get a commission on that of $15 maybe. To an owner, I'm going to get $300. Plus, that customer is going to come back 7 years. So lifetime value of that customer is $2,100. When you send them away, what's the chances they're coming back? It's certainly not 100%. And actually it's less than 50% that they're going to be back the next day. So, or anytime. So owners outwork, out hustle, outsmart the company employees. So yes, it's an advantage that they cannot equal. They try all kinds of systems and philosophies, but they cannot get their employees to act like owners.
Yeah. And the franchise model lets you just have that naturally part of the system. That's powerful. And you're accomplishing your other goal of really changing the lives of people through empowering entrepreneurship. That's super exciting. And now you're doing this with loyalty brands. You've been doing this for a few years, and you're kind of moving from tax into all of these other markets, right? So I'm just looking at some of these, from a New England lobster truck to a dog grooming franchise. How does it feel kind of moving into all of these other markets? And is it the same for you, same strategies, or does it feel very different in every one of these different markets?
I think customer service is customer service. For example, extending your hours during peak is just good business. Calling your customers, just good business. So our best practices go across all of our brands. Actually, where I spend most of my time focused on my two fastest growing industries. One is you know, I fondly call myself the great grandfather of tax, because there's only two people that founded national companies in this industry, me and Henry Block, and he died long ago. And I have 54 years. So, and plus I'm a great granddaddy now. So, so in tax, I'm always going to be the best in tax, in my own opinion. But I've learned to love the pet industry. That's just exploding. I mean, everything pet, whether it's insurance or dog walking or pet sitting or doggy daycare, or, I mean, it's just exploding and growing. And I love it because, for a couple of reasons, extra because there's no number one. I've been competing with H&R Block this 42 years, and they have this household brand name, and they have 9,000 offices, and everyone in America knows who they are, but no one knows who the largest dog mobile dog grooming is. By the end of this year, by the end of 2024, we're going to be national and the biggest. We're going to be the biggest name in mobile dog grooming. And I've never had that in all my, so that's just special for me, because my two companies at Jackson Hewitt and Liberty, and now they grew to 10,000 offices to compare combined to H&R Block's 9,000, but they neither got to more than about 6,000 locations. So I now will have the number one in the industry for the first time. And it's growing so fast. In tax, it grew by about 1% a year for 55 years. Whereas in pets, it's growing double digits every year.
Wow, that's exciting. And it I can really feel your passion about customer service coming through, not only on tax, which feels very dry to most people. And obviously you believe, and it, you really have made a difference in so many people's lives and taken away so much pain for all of us who have to do our taxes, which is amazing. And then doing it through, through pet services as well. It's fascinating. It's a phenomenal model. I really appreciate you taking the time, John. You've made a difference in thousands of people's lives, and I hope our listeners can appreciate just some of the passion that you've got for customer service and the way that you model companies. I, you know, it's so funny. I teach a course at on business planning at Boston College, and I find that, you know, the business model itself makes such a huge difference in how a business executes. And maybe just as in closing, can you just talk about your philosophy on business model? Because you've really chosen this franchise model versus a company ownership model, and how that has affected your success and the way that you kind of built your businesses.
Yeah, I believe in structure and systems, and there's really, in my opinion, just two components of business, and one is people and the other is system. And I invent my systems based on, I call it the tip of the iceberg theory, that if something is a one-off event, you don't create a system for it. But if something's going to happen, especially when in all of my chains, I have thousands of offices, right? If you see something happening, I'll give you an example. A franchisee many years ago called up, and it was April 15th, and it was in Los Angeles, and the news or the TV was coming to his office to film a show, and he called up corporate headquarters, and everyone in marketing was out in the field because it was April 15th, so he couldn't get any advice on what to tell them or what to do. So I called up my chief marketing officer and said, or I sent a copy of his email complaining. She said, "This is the worst franchisee in the world. I mean, why do we need to listen to him?" And I said, "We need to learn from everyone." But I said, "How many times is the news crew going to come to one of our offices on April 15th or during the tax season? Every TV show, every TV station, every radio, every newspaper does something on tax. We need, in training, we need to have a module on what to do when the press contacts you. And in our operating manual, we need to have a module on what to do if the press contacts you." So we improved our system based on listening to this, Jesus said, this horrible franchise. Well, you can learn from everyone. And, he was poor, but he taught us a lesson and improved our system, right? Yeah. So if a gunman had come to the front of the office and he was looking for advice on a gunman, then we wouldn't have invented a system, because that's one in a million, right? But we changed our system, because when something's going to happen hundreds of times, you need to have a system for it in order to have a world-class system.
Yeah.
Organization.
I love it. You can learn from everyone, and you've not only learned anecdotally, you've turned that into systems and process and help your businesses thrive, grow, and explode. So it's been, it's amazing. John, you've done amazing things, and it feels like you're still, you're on a whole new growth curve with Loyalty Brands. So exciting to follow your progress. If people want to interact with you on any of this, can they contact you on LinkedIn, or what's the best way to reach out?
Sure. LinkedIn is easy. Or if they want a free copy of my book, they can send me their address on LinkedIn or at loyaltybrands.com, and I'll send them a free copy of my book that talks about my journey and my success. And it also has many, many, many of the mistakes I made.
That's great. And I'll put that offer out there, and hopefully you'll be able to help more people through not only through your business work, but also through your book. Thanks, John, for taking the time. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, Dave. My pleasure. Have a great day.